Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, and welcome to Fair Recovery Radio. I am Wayne Baker. Rick and John and Leslie are out again. So you're stuck with me and my very special guest. I've twisted Dr. Vogdavi Munier's arm to come back and talk to us about her work with couples, and so welcome back.
Thank
We're
you.
Glad to have you back here. I know that your depth of knowledge and experience in working with couples is just really beneficial to me and to so many of us here into the Austin community. Last time you were here, we talked some about a two-day seminar that you were doing.
That's right.
How did that go?
It went fabulous. We had 23 couples, and we had couples from all over Texas, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. We even had a couple of couples from out of Texas. And, you know, it's a wonderful workshop that was developed by John Gottman. I talked about him last time I came on the show, and would love to talk about him again if you give me some time to. And
you bet.
We hope to keep doing this workshop. It's a two-day couples workshop. And what it does is it really teaches couples how to be friends the first day. And the second day, it really teaches them some amazing, powerful tools for how to deal with conflict. And so we had couples that really went through a transformation. And it was the most amazing thing to watch. Couples who had been stuck in their relationships in terms of not being able to resolve conflicts or talk to each other about some important things. And there were actually probably four or five couples at least that I knew of who had experienced an affair in the relationship. And some of the tools we teach them really help them finally begin to start talking about these topics, about the affair, in a way that doesn't just lead to a lot of anger and bitterness and hurt. So it was really amazing to watch, and it was a lot of work for us, but well worth it.
Yeah. So when you say teaching couples to talk, does it feel like sometimes it's the white elephant in the room with some couples, or is it, what did you mean by teaching them to talk and getting?
Well, you know, when you speak of the white elephant, it sounds like a topic that everybody knows is there, but nobody's talking about it, right? I don't know about you, but couples that I've worked with, depending on how long ago the affair happened, they can really have different kinds of problems with it. There are some couples who are talking about it all the time.
Right.
I mean, they can't pass the sugar, honey. I can't believe you had an affair, you know. But they never get anywhere with it. You know, it becomes an unsolvable problem, a perpetual problem. And, you know, in the beginning, they might have an hour or two worth of talking about it, but they get so good at fighting about this that they actually are able to have the whole fight in 5 minutes. So it's like they get better at getting stuck and getting there faster. And so it's not like they're not talking about it, but they're spinning their wheels.
Right.
You know?
Right. So I know you and I talked a little bit before the show about, and maybe this leads into that, is the commitment to being honest, or is it, what is your belief on that? Or what do you think about is it total honesty and everything and always, or especially with regarding to infidelity?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think about?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I don't think there's one answer to that. You know, it's a question that a lot of couples have to answer for themselves. do you reveal everything about yourself, including your thoughts and your innermost feelings and every single nuance of everything that happened to you today, to your spouse? And that's the only level of openness and transparency that marks a good relationship. Or is it okay to leave some parts of your relation, of your life experience, out of the marital relationship? Is it okay not to tell your spouse about every single failed relationship you had before? Is it okay to tell them, not tell them about every single teasing incident you had in middle school, right? Is it also okay to leave things out that are happening to you right now? I think that it's a controversial issue. I don't think there's one answer. Mm. I can take a stand either way.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, knowing you, you could probably make a case either way for it. Well, you know, one of the things we'd like to hear from you, the listeners, about this, too, is what do you think? Certainly, Vogdavia and I have an opinion or opinions, but we would also love to hear from you and what you have to say about total commitment to honesty. And the number here is 365-9930. So we would love to hear from you about that or anything else.
Do we need to give them an area code?
It's 512. Thank you.
Yeah. If you're out of the area, you want to call in, you're most welcome. Yep. We'd love to hear from you. Yes, because I think it's not so much about it being a pat answer, like you should or shouldn't do this. It's really about what were you raised to believe and how do you live your life, you know? There's a book here that I brought with me that I'd love to read out of if you're willing to let me
sure.
do that. It's called Radical Honesty. And, you know, I loved this book when I saw it because it's sort of like me. I'm very radical about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Honesty being one
you.
Of them. And what's interesting is that actually working with couples, I've gone from a radical to not so radical position. Because in this book, he really talks about how the only, you know, way to live your life with integrity is to be radically honest. And I don't know about that. Now, let me read some things out here that I think are helpful for us to sort of have a conversation about this. He talks about three different kinds of honesty. He talks about level one, which is revealing the facts. And I think when people talk about radical honesty, that's kind of how they see it. They think, every piece of information that's going through my head should be revealed to my partner or spouse, and that's what they think of as honesty. But there's a couple of other levels. There's a second level, which is being honest with yourself about your current thoughts and feelings. And that, I think, is what we in our field would call self-awareness, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
When your spouse says, so why were you late from work today, honey? And you say, oh, there's just a lot of traffic. Well, are you really stopping for a moment and thinking about, was that the only reason I was late? Was there more, you know? Is that a complete answer? And am I even in touch with what made me procrastinate today? Right? What made me kind of drag my feet as I got out of work? That would be a level two kind of honesty. It's really, you know, being in touch with your own thoughts and feelings. And I think you have to make a choice about whether or not you reveal that to your partner. But before you ever reveal it to anybody, being able to be honest with yourself is really important. Let me see if I can find level three. Aha! Level three, I want to read this out here, is called exposing the fiction. Okay. This is the third level of telling the truth, the place where telling the truth and living the truth becomes the same. This is the place where some religions would say, if you speak the truth long enough, your word becomes universal law. Okay? This third level occurs when you admit that who you are is not who you have been pretending to be. That you begin to ask the question, what have you been selling yourself on? What sort of values, beliefs, ideas have you been kind of conning yourself into? Oh, I'm a really honest person, except that maybe I was at the store and I got a little bit of extra change back and I never told the store clerk that they did the math wrong and gave them back the money. Maybe I say I'm a person of integrity and yet, you know, I gossip at work about my boss behind his back. That's the kind of selling yourself on something that becomes a problem. You begin to then live a lie. And what happens, according to Brad Blanton, who wrote this book, Radical Honesty, is that you stop knowing who you are. And I think in the context of affairs, we can say a lot about these three levels, don't you think?
You bet.
Let me stop there and see what reactions you have to that.
Yeah, the whole what you just said is, well, going back to level two, being honest with yourself. When you were talking about that, I thought, you know, why did I want to look at porn today? Would be one guy maybe asking that question. Or why, what, but I think in our culture maybe we don't take the time to do that type of deep work for ourselves and even journal it. You know, what was it? I think because sometimes we define ourselves by our thoughts or the crazy thoughts that come through. And sometimes that's not who we are at all.
Right.
Telling ourselves the truth versus living the truth. What was it? How did you say? You are not.
You stop. You become. Oh, well, am I going to find this place? You are not you are who you tell yourself you are.
Right. Who are you? You. I can't even say it now.
If we can find this
who
place.
Who you are is not who you have been pretending to be.
Yes.
And I think that's very true with the addict, whether it's sexual or alcohol or drug or spending, control, whatever.
Right, right. You know, I was thinking about pornography. I've had couples where one person was watching pornography on the computer, and I've heard excuses. I'm sorry to call them excuses, but that's how they come across.
Sure.
Like, oh, there was a link on this webpage. And I really didn't mean to go there. I was just going shopping in a Yahoo shopping site and came across this link. And I don't know what made me click it, but I clicked it and 2 hours later.
Right. Or five.
Or five or whatever. And what they do is they really begin to convince themselves that that's the way it happened.
Yeah.
And what they're not doing is they're not stopping to understand what happened inside of themselves between seeing that link flashing at you. Because Yahoo and other websites do a great job of really inviting you to stray. Is that a good way to put it?
You bet. Right.
And what do you do when you see that? You know, do you just stick your tongue out and follow every gold penny or every flashing light?
Right.
And just chase after it? Do you stop and say, what am I doing here? Is this what I want my life? Is this how I want to spend my time? Do I want to be able to tell my great-grandchildren, well, you know, your great-grandpa spent about 5 hours a day looking at porn websites? That's the level of honesty we stop having with ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so it sounds like it's time to take a break. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call at area code 512-365-9930. And please feel free to weigh in on anything we're talking about. Thanks very much. We'll see you in a minute.
Do you believe in modern-day miracles? I do. Because daily, I witness them as couples who are torn asunder by infidelity are reconciled. Hi. I'm Rick Reynolds, founder of the Affair Recovery Center. Please join us each Sunday evening from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time at Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we witness on an ongoing basis the miracles of God. We have seen and witnessed that there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So welcome back. Bogdavia and I have just been talking about honesty and commitment to telling the truth, but I want to take a quick minute to let you know that we have another emergency marriage seminar coming up on September 21st through the 23rd. It's about a month away, And for those of you that don't know what EMS or Emergency Marriage Seminar is, it is a fast-paced weekend workshop that's designed for couples whose relationships have been battered by infidelity and or sexual acting out. This weekend will help you put back your marriage or help you put your marriage back on track by helping to reestablish intimacy and work through the pain of betrayal. It'll also help you find healing and forgiveness. And believe it or not, we believe here at the Affair Recovery Center that your marriage can emerge from infidelity, whether it's an adulterous affair, an emotional affair, or a pornographic affair, stronger than it was before. So we would very much encourage you to attend that if you need it. And you can call our offices at 512-346-9299. So, Vogdavia, it sounds like I have this frog in my voice tonight.
So, yeah. There you go.
So, on the heels of honesty and truth-telling...
Okay, you just sound like a very wise...
I sound...
Raspy person.
But I don't sound like Barry White or anything, right?
Oh, who's Barry White?
Oh, he's this singer that's got this great, sexy voice, right? So on the heels of honesty and integrity and truth telling, we were talking about beating this dead horse already, but was there anything else that you thought of that you wanted to say or
Well, here's from the same book. I want to read something out real quick because I think that might be a good segue for us.
You bet.
Okay. This is a book called Radical Honesty, written by Brad Blanton. It's a pretty old book. I don't know if you wrote another version of it. But, you know, before I do, let me remind folks, you can call in, 512-365-9930, or else you'll just hear us going on all night long, which I don't know that you all want to. So here's something he's got in here that I thought might be a good segue for us. It's called A Checklist for Intimacy. He says, if you are a couple and you're reading this chapter with an eye to having it help you have a better relationship with your mate, God bless you. If you're willing to risk and want to grow together, start by using the following checklist for intimacy. And if you haven't done a particular item on the list with your mate, then do it. So here's his checklist. Number one, tell each other your entire life story, taking about 3 hours each. Number two, tell each other your complete sexual history, including how many people you've had sex with, what gender they were, and the details of what you did with them. Number three.
Wow.
Yeah. Masturbate to orgasm in front of each other with no assistance from each other. Number four. Tell each other of any affairs, near affairs, necking, arousal, daydream, or flirtation you have engaged in since you've known each other. And then number five, which is the last one, take turns with a half an hour monologue in which one of you agrees to be silent and the other speaks. Tell your partner everything you resent them for. And everything you appreciate them for. After you've taken a turn, talk about the two monologues for at least half an hour.
Wow. That's very intense.
That is intense.
Well, before we go there, it looks like we have a caller. And I think Rick is on the phone. I knew he was going to call. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but I haven't heard what y'all are talking about.
Hey, Rick. Long time no talk.
I know.
Well, are you not listening to us?
Well, I can't.
He's being radically honest is what he's being, you know.
Things aren't going well in the airport.
Oh, really?
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Where are you?
Portland Airport, fixing to fly out.
Oh, you're still up there. Okay. Well, we have been talking about radical honesty and truth-telling. Do you have anything to say about that?
It's the only way to fly.
It's funny because airline industry is not known for its truth telling, you know. I bet you paid more money than somebody sitting right next to you on that flight.
That is probably a really good possibility. But no, when it comes to marriage in general, I think that it's imperative that you be honest. You know, because that's what intimacy is. It's the ability to be honest.
Now, how honest would you say is good enough honesty? Do you have to tell your spouse or partner every single thought or feeling you have throughout the day?
Well, I don't know that my partner would want to know every single thought, but I think the things that she would really want to know, I need to be willing to tell her those things. I mean, to me, you know, infidelity is just the keeping of secrets, and to the extent that I'm trying to hold something back in an attempt, I guess, to deceive her. I mean, for instance, let's say I'm laundering money. I think I need to be honest about how I'm spending money. I don't need to be hiding what I'm doing with money. I mean, I think that's one area that we can be very dishonest.
Hmm. Yep.
Well, what about honesty with yourself? This is something else that we've been talking about, is that honesty with someone else has to begin by becoming honest with yourself completely.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, honesty with self. You mean, in other words, just not being in denial and admitting that sometimes I've got a problem so that I can let my mate know that I've also got a problem, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, that, and we were trying to actually take it to a different level almost. We were talking about, you know, when you do some, when you make a decision, like you see a link on a website for a porn site and you click on that link and you say, well, I don't know why, but I just clicked on it. That's not honesty. Really being able to slow it down and becoming curious about what draws you.
I'm sorry. Okay, good. They're through with their announcement. What were you saying now, Buck Davey? I'm sorry.
That's all right. I was just saying that there's a different level of honesty, which is about really taking the time and effort to understand yourself and to not make excuses, to not say, I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I called her back. You know, I just felt like it. She sent me a note on the work email saying, why don't you give me a call? And I just called her. I don't know why. That's not honest. That honesty is really saying, I'm responsible for understanding why I'm making the decisions I make on a moment-by-moment basis.
Right. Anytime I think somebody's playing victim, they're not being honest.
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, because when I'm playing the victim, at that point, I think that, you know, I'm trying to immediately use my defense mechanisms to avoid responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And any time somebody's incredibly resentful, a lot of times I think there's a problem with honesty, interestingly enough. Because typically if someone's really resentful, then, again, I think they're playing victim a lot. I'm not saying that that's the case in every situation, but those are just kind of little warning signs that I see that someone's not able to be honest with themselves about what their part is in something or what they're doing.
Right, right. Well, I, you know, when I first married my husband, I went to visit his family, and the thing that just blew me away was that they had this way of talking to each other that allowed them all to not take responsibility for anything that happened in their environment. So somebody would spill something on the carpet and they'd go, oh, it spilled. Or, oh, it fell. So things just kept falling by themselves. You know? Nobody had to claim that they had anything to do with something falling or spilling. And it was just very funny to watch.
That type of honesty, I think, takes, though, a great deal of ability to self-soothe.
Oh, yeah.
It's very anxiety-provoking. I mean, Stephanie's family is the exact opposite of your husband's family. I mean, they were incredibly honest and would confront all kinds of things. And coming from a family that was very conflict-avoidant, for me, it just made me almost have a coronary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, see, I think, you know, we are therapists, after all, so let's take a compassionate view of this. I think people don't just become dishonest. You know, it's not like everybody who's dishonest makes a deliberate decision to be that way. I think sometimes we are raised in families where there's this value or this belief that conflict is bad.
Right.
And that if people fight, they're going to hurt each other, or that families are going to fall apart. So everybody learns these very subtle ways to sort of speak around the truth and just kind of sidestep some confrontation.
But eventually the problem, I think, with those families is they end up being somewhat inflexible, and, you know, eventually they hit the wall and something bad happens.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, you know, it's a very human thing to do, to not want to confront a conflict.
Yeah, because I want to be liked. I want everybody to like me.
Right, and so, you know, I'd rather do my image management and lie than be honest and, you know, have people not think as highly of me because, you know, I'm just being real with that I'm not perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason we avoid honesty is a lot of times it messes with our sense of perfection or our image, and so we choose not to be honest, and ultimately I think we damage relationships rather than helping them.
And, you know, once you start managing your image, let's say you do it at work or you do it with your friends, it becomes easier after that. And it actually becomes easier and easier to have two different personalities or a kind of a false personality that you show certain people or under certain conditions, and then another real personality that kind of creeps out or comes out under different conditions. And the more that you begin to create these false and real sort of personalities, I think it becomes easier and easier to tell a lie and to take it to the level of an affair.
Right, I agree with that.
So, Rick, we're going to take a break.
I'm having all kinds of trouble here at the airport.
We can hear that. Yeah. We're so sorry.
Well, I'm probably going to need to get off. They're both trying to board my plane here. I am so sorry.
That's okay.
No, that's all right.
Have a
perfect
safe trip.
Timing.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, you guys have a good night. Thanks for taking care of everything tonight, guys.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care.
So it is time for us to take a break. So give us a call if you'd like to weigh in on anything we've discussed or anything that you have on your mind at 512-365-9930. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, welcome back to A Fair Recovery Radio. I'm Wayne Baker with Dr. Vogdavian Munier, and so far tonight we have talked about radical honesty, and we had a caller call in during the break and wanted to know more about the comment that was made about how is resentment dishonest? So, Vogdavian,
you know, that was a comment that Rick
expert.
Made. I was hoping you weren't going to put it on me.
I'm not trying to throw you under the bus or anything.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. So that was a comment that Rick made, and I'm going to just, you know, try to read his mind and talk about how I would see that as dishonest. But honestly, I don't know. I don't know where he was coming from. So I'm hoping you'll jump in too, Wayne.
Okay, I'd love to hear.
And add your thoughts. But I was thinking of how resentment is really a righteous indignation, right? Resentment is often kind of a moralistic position. I, you know, can't believe this person did X, Y, or Z. In order to take a righteously indignant position, we sometimes have to ignore certain aspects of the truth. We have to ignore certain aspects of the experience. I am resentful that my husband does not do the dishes. Well, in order to take a righteous position about that, I might have to ignore the fact that the reason he doesn't do dishes is because I do them before he ever gets a chance to do them. Or maybe he did the dishes, you know, 3 times in the last month, but not 30 times like I wanted him to. And to me, that's where the resentment, it's sort of like a chain. Once you have one resentful thought or feeling, it kind of feeds itself. And you can't think about it. You can't remember a resentment against somebody without immediately having a whole chain of thoughts and feelings that come up along with it. And that's because there's a lot of justification we do. Gottman calls this distress-maintaining thoughts. We maintain distress in our heads by thinking, how could this person have done that? How could he not do the dishes, you know? He married me. He knows I work too, and he knows that I have just as many responsibilities. So we kind of have a conversation in our head with this person, but in that process, we actually tell a story that's more favorable to us than to the other person. And I think that's where the lies begin, right? We stop paying attention to any disconfirming aspects of the experience that would change our position from a morally indignant to a more compassionate, I screwed up, you screwed up, we're both human kind of place. Hmm. What do you think?
Well, you know, I was thinking along the lines of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, mm-hmm. and how defensive and the lack of taking responsibility can feed that resentment, and then even the contempt. And it just seems like it's I don't know if it's linear or circular or whatever, I don't know, but it just feels that resentment either towards your own behavior or your childhood or your spouse can certainly feed that defensiveness, mm-hmm. and make it easier. I think like what you're saying, once you get started down that path, just to continue to be dishonest,
yeah.
with yourself.
Just to sort of tell our listeners, you know, about the Four Horsemen, this is a concept that John Gottman developed out of his research. He did 30 years of research with couples, and he came up with 4 behaviors that he found to be the best indicators for when a couple was headed towards a divorce, okay? This is he was just doing observational research. So this was not, you're going to head for divorce regardless. It was, you're going to head for divorce if you don't intervene or do something different here to change this. So the 4 behaviors he called the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. One is criticism. And criticism is taking a complaint that you have, something you don't like that's just happened, and turning it into an indication of a defect in your partner, putting it in their bodies. You know, what's the matter with you that you don't do the dishes? That's a way to take a complaint. I didn't like the fact that you didn't do dishes, and turning it into something's wrong with you.
Yeah, you lazy bum.
You lazy bum. Well, right. Lazy bum actually is going up to a contempt level, I think.
Okay.
Especially
if you roll your eyes when you say it, right?
You sloth.
Okay.
Right, there you go. Criticism is something very low level that a lot of us do a lot of times. We walk around being critical and skeptical and cynical. The next one is defensiveness, and defensiveness is usually a reaction to criticism. When somebody criticizes me, I feel like giving them tit for tat. You know, I feel like coming back at them and saying, oh, I didn't wash dishes. Well, when was the last time you went grocery shopping? You know, that becomes kind of a defensive response. And like you said, defensiveness begins with not taking responsibility for the part that I actually did do. Maybe if my spouse is saying, you didn't do the dishes, at least I could say is, yeah, the dishes are not done. And I can see how I could have done the dishes and I chose not to. It's not like saying I'm a bad person, but it's like saying I see why you're upset. So defensiveness is the second horseman. And the third horseman is contempt. And contempt is the number one best indicator for when a relationship is going to fall apart.
When you say it's the most, is it the most dangerous? Would you say
it is? John Gottman calls it the sulfuric acid of love. Hmm. Because it turns out that contempt, which is really just taking a morally superior or a, intellectually superior position to your partner or spouse. It's like saying, you know, you lazy bum would be a contemptuous statement, because you're not only saying what's the matter with you, you're saying, I know what's the matter with you, and the matter is that you're lazy. You know, there's, you're defective and you're less than me. I'm not lazy like you. That's another implicit comment that's hidden behind that. So contempt is a terrible thing to do. And if you watch yourself doing contempt in a relationship, which, going back to Esteban's question, you know, contempt usually comes out of bitterness and resentment. After we've spent a bunch of time up in our heads saying, this person hurt me or did something unjust and I'm justified in being angry, we start to then think, well, you know, this person's worthless and I'm okay and they're not. And that's where contempt comes from. The fourth one is stonewalling. And stonewalling is basically shutting down and refusing to kind of have a conversation with your spouse, you know, putting up a wall, turning your head away, becoming kind of non-responsive. Which, it turns out, is related to what Rick also said earlier, which is about self-soothing. After we've become pretty flooded, pretty filled up with a lot of anger and bitterness, then our spouse can't even say one word before we feel really overwhelmed with anger or emotions. And then we can't deal with it. So we have to shut it down. We have to shut ourselves down. And that's when we become stonewallers. Sorry for that lecture. You know, I'm a professor, so I'm used to...
I know that very well.
Yeah, you just have to give me a microphone and an open, you know...
And an audience. And
And better still if it's an invisible audience.
That's right. That's right.
At least if it's a visible audience, they're making faces at me and I start to, you know, wax too wordy.
Well, it's not like your students are nodding off. You can't see them right now, right? If anybody is, sort of, they're not shaking their watch at you.
So why don't you call us? Call us and you know, please save Wayne and George from my never-ending lectures. It's, our phone number here is 512-365-9930.
9930, yeah, that's
call
correct.
Call us.
Yeah. Well, I think that I'm glad you did go into the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, because I talk about them all the time with my couples that I work with, and not even just couples. I think that those principles, you know,
work in all relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
parents, siblings, friends. I mean, you can see them everywhere. It's just good relationship information, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm. So it's good relationship advice in a way.
Yeah.
If you don't do anything else, if you just know the Four Horsemen and don't do them, you'll be good shape.
Well, yeah, I think what I tell couples a lot is
there's that frog again. Ribbit.
I know. It's and I tell them, don't go pointing out these four guys in your partner. It's much better to start with yourself.
That's right.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, using a biblical principle of not looking for the speck in your mate's eye when you've got a log in your own, you mm-hmm. know. So just start with you. Just be aware of where you're being defensive.
One of the things I say to my couples is, if you start to point out the Four Horsemen in your partner, that is one of the Four Horsemen.
I guess that's true, right?
Yeah. So just remember, you might be, you know, what's that children's poem? You're pointing one finger at the other person and three are pointed back at you.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, exactly. So it may be time to take another break. Please give us a call. We'd certainly love to hear from you at 512-365-9930. And Esteban, if you're listening, I hope we answered your question. Call us back if you've got more. All right. Thanks.
Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by a betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do. by what we have personally experienced. Let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
Hi, my name is Becca. You're listening to The Word, 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Hi, so welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio. We're sitting here talking because you guys aren't calling, and so you're gonna. If you don't start calling, you're gonna just hear more of us talking. And we, Vogdevi, what was the? I'm drawing a blank. The
topic? Radical honesty.
Well, the radical honesty, but the resentment. Is it okay?
Oh yeah.
To be angry, and when does anger and become resentment? I'm not formulating that well.
No. Let me see if I understand the question and can talk about it a little bit. Let me give you our phone number here. It's 512-365-9930. But I want to make a distinction between assertive anger and unassertive anger. I think assertive anger is, you know, somebody swindles me out of money, I'm going to be legitimately angry. But once I get angry, anger is just a signal. It's just a signal that says, I've been thwarted, I've been hurt, somebody's done me wrong. I need to think about, well, what do I want out of this? What's my goal here? What is my anger leading me towards? I think resentment comes up when the anger is blocked. It's either blocked because the government swindled me out of money and I really can't do anything about that, or my best friend swindled me out of money and I don't want to lose the friendship. And so I tell myself I can't do anything about that. So there has to be anger plus a little helplessness or a sense of feeling trapped for it to turn into resentment. That's my take on it. What do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that's key there is, what is that feeling underneath the anger? Is it, and I don't think we take time to really kind of think about or take time to feel whatever it is. Is it guilt or inferiority?
Right.
Trauma, hurt, embarrassment, rejection. What is that?
That's a great point. I'd like for us to come back to that, but I know we have a caller waiting.
Yeah, so we have a caller. Wayne in Oregon, are you there?
I am.
Well, thanks for calling. Do you have a question or a comment?
Well, kind of both. The wife and I religiously listen to you guys. You called in before.
Uh-huh.
Was Rick in Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine?
He was in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, man, I wish we'd have known. We could have put him up for the weekend. We live down by Salem. Well, our comment is, or my comment is, you know, I've, of course, come from... The wife is, and I discovered that from my family of origins problems that I escalated into sexual addict, and so we're dealing with that, and the grace of God and my wife, we're dealing with those issues. And part of that is, as we listen to your program tonight, assuming someone thinks, feels, or acts a certain way then leads to resentment and anger. And as I walk through the steps, realize that half my life I've been resentful about one thing or another, and part of that was assuming that a person felt a certain way, and in that wrongful thinking I grasp onto that and use that as an excuse.
That's a really good comment. I mean, you know, John Gottman, this guy I talk about a lot, talks about habits of mind, that we tend to have habits of mind that create a filter for us. We start to filter the environment through these habits of mind. And it's entirely human to have a filter that scans out certain pieces of information so that we're left with resentment. Right? And resentment often comes from feeling like somebody did us wrong, that there was some sort of an injustice.
Right. So we grasp that and use it as an excuse to provide ourselves with an escape mechanism, be it alcoholism or sexualism or whatever we use as an excuse, rather than face our inner demons. You know, and it's been quite a walk. And so when you were talking about the principles, the four principles or the four horsemen, mm-hmm. I expected to hear financial or sexual or whatever, but you didn't. You talked more on a broader spectrum. And when you look at those things, it's real clarity. And so when you point that out in your mate, you're actually pointing at yourself. And so, man, that's really clarifying. And it's like, what horse am I riding right now?
Yes. What a great question.
Yeah, that's good.
What horse am I riding right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like I used to cowboy a little bit. So, you know, which horse am I on right now that I can have these feelings? That's not relational to have that feeling when I'm the one riding the horse.
Right, right. You know, Wayne and I talked about forgiveness. And Rick sort of, I think, mentioned this when he said self-soothing. When you ask yourself, what horse am I riding on? What am I, you know, what am I doing right now? One of the things I think we forget to do is to forgive ourselves for being just human. You know, most of us don't come into this world thinking, why don't I just become this really nasty, mean, cynical person and live my whole life being crabby at everybody else? We don't ask for that, you know. But we find ourselves there, and when we do, I think the first step in the process is to say, it's okay. It's okay that I turned out this way, and I can choose not to do it at this moment. I can choose to become radically honest with myself about why I'm feeling resentful. What have I either assumed about the other person and haven't checked it out, or what am I focusing on that may be a little bit of a biased perspective, and how can I back up and say, okay, I'm going to calm myself down, I'm going to self-soothe, and I'm going to say, okay, let me figure this out. Let me understand their perspective. Let me understand what I'm really wanting so that I can create a moment of healing or an opening for a new direction.
Well, it's funny you even talk like that because, you know, through this walk I've been taking, you know, forgiving myself has been the hardest part because I've, you know, truly, really hurt my wife and my family and my kids and even my grandkids and stuff. And it's horrible in that you look at yourself and you have to get to the point where you can forgive yourself. And to think of yourself as one way, because I always thought I was a kind of a stand-up cowboy kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I was fairly honest. And then through my discovery, I am been everything but that, and so I have been struggling with forgiving myself and through my anger and resentment, getting over all that stuff and looking at myself in the mirror has been a horrifying experience. I mean, here was this black soul walking around thinking he was a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
And it's been a real awakening, so forgiving myself has been a tough time.
Yeah, I think, you know, Wayne, I think that is, I hear that all the time, I think we both do, is that it's forgiving of yourself is the hardest part for so many people. I'm just curious, how long have you been in this walk of recovery, or however you said it?
Since November, and then in January. November was when the wife found out about my 9-year affair, and then discovered I was a sexual addict. Like, we started downloading Dr. Weiss's stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we found your guys' site, and then sexual addiction, what's that? I've always been addicted to sex, but didn't know that it was an addiction, and I was using it as a crutch or weapon or
medication.
Medication, yeah, escape valve.
Did we lose you? Wayne?
No, I'm still here. Okay. And so, probably January, February, clarity came, and I'm a sex addict, and I have to go through sobriety, and then when I go through sobriety, it's like, gosh, who is that black person? You know, I don't mean black, but I mean black inside, you know.
Yeah.
No character, deceitful and all those horrifying terms. And so in my sobriety, I just go, well, I wasn't that person. Well, yes, I was. So I've been to group, and I've been listening to a lot of downloads. The wife and I have been doing a lot of recovery. We go to, you know, counseling, so.
Good for you. Yeah, good great. For you. Because, you know, I think that's kind of recent for you to be mm-hmm. on the road to recovery. Maybe one of the things you need to forgive yourself about is that you're not farther along than you are. Because it takes a lot of time and effort. I mean, like you said, being able to look at yourself in the mirror and really take an honest look at yourself is terrifying and one of the hardest things to do. And you can't do it just once and be done with it. You really have to practice it every day.
Every day. And I wear the rubber band, and I've used it to snap myself. Because, you know, part of the problem is the going to fantasy. Even just thinking of yourself as a cowboy riding the range. You know, you have to stay in reality. And I know that our pastor says part of our spirituality is the fantasy. It's got to be an appropriate fantasy. And so when you have used fantasy your whole life as an escape valve, coming back to reality, you know, it hasn't not been a struggle because it's been so horrifying.
Yeah.
But I intend to, you know, keep working on this. And so I think, and, you know, part of this thing is I'm a recovering sexaholic the rest of my life. And so in that, I realize that I have a lot of work to do.
Yes.
And it's been good and bad. I mean, bad in that, gosh, how did I ever get here? And good in that I can only go up from here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Well, Wayne, we've got to go, but I sure do appreciate you calling. Thanks for listening. I know you guys are faithful up there in Portland, Oregon, to listen to the show.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Thank
you guys.
You
have a good evening.
Bless you guys.
Bless you.
Right.
Well, I think we're at the end of our program. Bogdavia, I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell people how to contact you if they loved what you had to say.
Thank you. Because we can certainly refer
them on, but how do they call you or how do they contact you?
Great. Well, the best way to reach me would be to go to this website that I have that has information about my couples workshops, and I'm going to be updating them as we get our new dates. For 2008, it's www.txcouplesworkshops.com. If you want to call me, my private practice number is 512-587-2499. If you didn't have a chance to write that down, don't worry about it. The number and the contact information is on the website. You can email me from there, too.
Good. Well, again, I just thank you so much for coming and being with me tonight. You saved me. They'd have had to listen to me all by myself, you know, or George.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This was kind of a fun conversation. Yeah. I don't get to go have this conversation with anybody in my life, you know? I mean, my husband is tired of hearing me talk about this.
Yeah, this goes on at my house, too. So, and thank you, listeners, for joining us tonight. Please remember to go to our website at affairrecovery.com, register for the newsletter, and you can also listen to all of the radio shows that have been archived there. And we sure appreciate your faithful listening to us week after week. And remember, we'll be back here next Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Thanks very much, and we'll see you then.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, George.